Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Tuesday morning. Going to switch gears and talk about actually a good team. And that is the Vanderbilt Commodores. And to help us do that, we head to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our friend Robbie Weinstein from 24/7 Sports. Robbie, good morning, brother. How are we doing?
Hey, I'm doing well, guys. I'm curious to see, as a Titans fan, whether we're going to see Vandy offensive analyst Brian Callahan soon.
Yeah, we might see that. Hey,
just stay in town for the coaching car wash. Brian, I liked it.
Don't even have to move. Get over there. That could be something.
I believe he's friends with Clark Lee. They're pretty good friends.
Oh yeah. No doubt. No doubt about it. So, Robbie, 70 points for Vanderbilt in this game, which I saw your tweet. The first time that the Commodores have done that since 1918. So I realize that it's Georgia State. But I said heading into the game, I mean, that's a team that got you last year. Things are going really well for Vanderbilt to this point. Don't screw around with Georgia State and Utah State before the Alabama game. And so far, one of those two has been passed. So what have you made of not only the winning that Vanderbilt has done, but the fashion in which they've done it to get to this point this year?
Really surprised by that aspect. I mean, I think before the season, I felt like they would probably beat Virginia Tech. I wasn't very high on Virginia Tech. And, of course, pretty much all of us had them losing to, you know, a top 15 ranked South Carolina team on the road. But there was a little bit of room for, you know, hey, if South Carolina is disappointing this season, they lost a ton of talent and sort of have a top-heavy roster, maybe they could pull that one off. But, I mean, this is one of the slowest-paced offenses in the nation. And so I didn't really think they could hang 70 on anyone, just because the efficiency that you would need to do that in terms of how many of your drives go for touchdowns would need to be off the charts. And what do you know, in the first half, I think they went, what, 6 for 6?
Yep.
Every drive was a touchdown, 42 points. I mean, the amount of just surgical efficiency right now is truly toward the top of college football. And look, I thought the offense would be good to really good, but I mean, they look elite right now, and that's kind of what's driving things. And I'm definitely surprised by the extent that they have dominated so far.
So obviously they've got some new weapons, and they're able to spread the ball around to a lot of different people who can make plays. And then of course Pavia, I think has improved as a passer. Are you seeing anything schematically? Are there more layers? Is Tim Beck adding stuff? Is it as simple as, like, you know, adding some skill, but also the offensive line actually getting to the level where it's like actually a power four looking offensive line? I mean, where are you looking in terms of how things have improved?
Yeah, I think certainly they've improved the talent level at the O-line and wide receiver positions. I thought coming into the season it looked like a Big 12-ish offensive line, which for Vandy is a compliment historically. But now it's like, oh gosh, maybe they are, you know, a mid-tier SEC offensive line. Jordan White, the center, looks like he could be, you know, a third or fourth round pick. And Vandy hasn't had an offensive lineman drafted since I've been covering the team. I think the last one was Justin School by the 49ers in like 2018 or something like that. So that has been a big improvement. Something interesting that I heard, I can't remember if it was from Georgia State's coach, Del McGee. It was from one of the coaches who recently faced them. Basically saying like they're actually more traditional or less unorthodox this season so far than they were last year, because you don't see as much of that triple option that, you know, gave a lot of teams trouble last year. They have not had to run Diego Pavia very much. I think he only has one rushing touchdown, which was last game against Georgia State. So it took him 4 games to get on the board in that way. They wanted to protect him a little bit more, right? He was banged up through much of last season. And so you're seeing a lot less quarterback run, a lot less triple option, and they've still got that in the bag. That's sort of the scary thing, is they've been more of a passing-oriented and traditional tailback run-oriented type of offense. Of course, there's lots of options, and it's still kind of funky, and Tim Beck is a great play caller. But the interesting thing is that they're going to potentially go into this Alabama game in a couple weeks still having all that stuff in their bag that they haven't put on tape yet.
So, Robbie, from the fan base perspective, you know, the Charleston Southern game to begin the year, it was like, wow, look at the crowd out there at Vanderbilt. And then again, against Georgia State, you're talking about a sold-out building. Obviously, excitement for Vanderbilt fans probably at an all-time high right now, just based on, you know, the history of their program and what they're doing. out there right now. So what have you made of, I guess, the passion, not really all that surprising, but just the number of people that are showing up for games against Charleston Southern and Georgia State to this point?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised. I mean, at the end of the day, the stadium actually shrank due to the renovations. So I think capacity now is 35,000. I want to say it was 38 or 39 before in the old Vanderbilt Stadium. So it's not that high of a bar to sell out that stadium. But having said that, Charleston Southern and Georgia State, I mean, Charleston Southern is one of the worst FCS teams. I suppose that was the opener. So, you know, pent up excitement over the last 8 months or so. Georgia State, like, yeah, it was a revenge game, but one of the worst FBS teams. I was a little bit surprised that they were able to get that one to a sellout, and we'll see what happens against Utah State. So certainly a better opponent, but not as much of a connection in terms of the revenge game aspect. I mean, I definitely think probably the Pavia factor and sort of the swag he has brought to the program and just the exciting brand of football that they're playing right now probably helps with that. And to be completely honest, as a Titans fan, I wonder if their struggles have helped a little bit, because people probably don't want to go to two football games, you know, in one weekend. And it's a low bar to sell out that stadium, but you got to credit the fans, whatever's going on right now. I mean, they're selling out against not very interesting opponents.
Yeah, and I'm very interested to see, Robbie, when it gets into, you know, LSU, Auburn, and some of these games coming up with fans that I'm sure they're like, oh, yeah, just like the SEC fans do, right? Oh, Nashville, and we'll easily get tickets, yep, no problem. Like, what the stadium will look like then. Do you think that they'll be able to have more of their stadium for their fans in those games?
I feel like there'll be a little bit of a one-year lag there, where maybe after last season, Vandy fans were more fired up and bought some more tickets on that visiting side, like season tickets. But we know that historically a lot of visiting team fan bases will buy season tickets just for the one game and then sell the rest. I would have to think that just because Vandy is better than we expected coming into this season, that those teams' fans are probably not going to cough up the seats like, you know, Auburn fans or Texas fans, or I guess Texas isn't coming here, but LSU, when they've already probably booked travel accommodations and all that sort of stuff. So I would still expect pretty healthy opposing crowds for SEC play, but I'm certainly open to being wrong about that.
Robbie, defensively, I mean, look, we spend so much time focusing in on Pavia in the offense, and deservedly so, but defensively, when it's mattered this year, I mean, the second half against Virginia Tech, what they did against South Carolina, and I realize they knocked Sellers out of the game, and we'll never know what would have happened in the second half there, but they've just been really stout defensively there. And I wonder, as the schedule is going to shift coming up to SEC play, how equipped you think they are to sustain that level, where they're not shutting down like every SEC offense by any means out there, but their defense is good enough to keep you in it. Like, I've been really impressed in big moments what they've done to this point defensively.
Yeah, no, I have some of the same questions for sure. I think the offense plays against anyone largely because the quarterback is, you know, one of the top 10 quarterbacks roughly in the country. But for sure, defensively, they're sort of a bend but don't break defense. And, you know, that has worked for them. They're okay with giving up a decent amount of yards before you get to the red zone. But, I mean, they did give up 21 points to Georgia State. That's probably a little bit more than you would want, even though I believe one of the touchdowns was relatively late in the game. They have surrendered a fair amount of yards, and it's not really the type of defense that's just going to totally choke you off. They're not super aggressive in terms of playing press man coverage at corner. The safeties are more aggressive this year under new defensive coordinator Steve Gregory, who has done a great job. But their priority still is to avoid giving up long touchdowns. And, yeah, that has worked really well for them, but I still wonder, against higher-level athletes, sometimes Vandy looks still a little bit sketchy playing in space, especially the linebackers. And so I do think that is going to be a test for them when they get into the games against, you know, Auburn has some really tricky wide receivers to deal with in space. Of course, Tennessee, that offense is going to spread you out. And I think that is not really a very good matchup for Vandy. It certainly has not been historically. So that's definitely something to watch. I mean, their pass rush has improved, but I still think it could get better up the middle, like a defensive tackle interior pass rush. And they're for sure going to get challenged at the second and third levels of their defense as the season goes on.
So, Robbie, I'm guilty of this. I think everybody's doing this, which is these two games, you know, Georgia State, Utah State. Yeah, take care of those. Go to Alabama. Utah sure. State is not Georgia State. I mean, Utah State's 3-1. They have three blowout wins. They blew out, you know, like Air Force, UTEP, McNeese. They lost 44-22 at Texas A&M. That's a competitive loss at a very talented team. How much of a danger could this game be?
I think they could give up some points. Honestly, I do, because Utah State, it appears to have a very good offense. Bryson Barnes, the quarterback, he may sound familiar to some fans because he was at Utah before. He actually was there and I believe beat out Nate Johnson, the former Vandy quarterback who was battling with Pavia last offseason. And then, so that was when Cam Rising had been injured and Bryson Barnes became the starter. He was okay at Utah, and at Utah State, he has been really good this season. I do think that this game will have their attention to some extent, at least because Bronco Mendenhall is the coach of Utah State, and he's, you know, well-respected nationally. He, you know, the tenure at Virginia didn't really end well, but that he went to New Mexico and got them decently competitive in his first season, and now Utah State is already looking better than a lot of people expected. He is a mentor of Clark Lee's, and so I think that, you know, I'm sure Clark Lee will be talking to the team about how much respect he has for Mendenhall, and, you know, probably doesn't hurt that the former Vandy defensive coordinator Nick Howell is the DC at Utah State. He did not do a great job at Vandy, so then again, maybe they are overlooking him as a result of that. I don't know, but I do think they seem like a good team, and I think it is a trap game for Vandy a little bit, but I don't think it's such a poor opponent that they're just not going to take them seriously, because they do have some legit players, and I think they could score, you know, 24 or so points, maybe a little bit more.
Well, Robbie, it's been fun to watch to this point. We're looking forward to the game coming up later this week, and we will talk to you soon, my friend. Thanks for being with us this morning.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
Yep, Robbie Weinstein, our guest from 24/7 Sports, does a fantastic job covering the Vanderbilt Commodores. By the way, Joe, what's your guess for the Vanderbilt-Utah State line this weekend?
I will say Vanderbilt minus 11.5.
Double it. 22.5.
Okay. I'm telling you right now. I'm telling you right now, my lock is Utah State. Seriously. Okay. Guys, Utah State is going to come in and score points on Vanderbilt. They just like Robbie said. I mean, I think Vanderbilt will win, but like this is going to be like a 10-point game.
I'm just glad I asked you, because I knew that you would underestimate the line there. It's good.
Yeah, it was bad.
22.5.
I usually have a decent.
I saw it and I was like, really? 22.5. All right.
My God, Vegas loves Vandy.
Yeah, they do. We'll take your thoughts on Vanderbilt. Plus, the SEC annual opponents have been leaked in the new 9-game conference schedule. We'll get into that. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. Appreciate Robbie Weinstein for being with us in the last segment. 70 for Vanderbilt over the weekend, Joe. First time since 1918. Same year World War I ended.
I thought it was 1917. 1918?
14-18.
Okay. And by the way, did you know what that game was?
No.
It was Vanderbilt 76, Tennessee nothing in 1918.
Yeah, it was a long time ago.
That was back when Major Neyland, was he a major, I think, when they hired him?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah. We need you. We need someone who can beat the national powerhouse called Vanderbilt. Can you do it, sir?
Hey.
And eventually he did.
Eventually he did.
And the rest is history.
Towards it. Yep.
But 107 years ago, 76 Vanderbilt, nothing Tennessee. For all you Tennessee fans calling him Candy. Oh, speaking of that.
Is this a real thing?
Candy?
Yeah.
I think so.
I've never done that.
Candy!
Never seen it.
No, I absolutely see it. No, yeah. But this is an interesting post. I have a buddy. Quote, I have a buddy who always bought candy season tickets to resell. He's a UT fan. He was notified he was not eligible to buy season tickets this year because his resale percentage was too high.
Okay.
In the past, Vandy clearly hasn't cared. They just wanted the sale. Now that there's a product worth watching, they're cracking down. That should not be opposing fan number down.
And I kind of like that.
What? Yeah. No, you have to do stuff like that. We know well the Preds and some of their stuff and some of the complaints about it. I do agree with what Robbie said about the lag time. Like, If you have made these travel arrangements,
yeah,
you're gonna go to the game unless like a Vanderbilt fan just like you know, I mean, there are some rich Vanderbilt fans.
Yeah.
You know, so if some of them don't have tickets, then, you know, maybe they can buy you out. You can go to the bar. But that's an interesting point. I also do – the thing about the lag time is, though, I just think Diego Pavia is alone a huge draw.
I agree.
And obviously this is, what we think, his last year. So what does that look like next year? I don't know. Like, can they sustain this? These are things that we don't need to talk about. Just like we don't need to talk about who the new Titans coach will be or who they're going to draft. It's football season. It's September.
Yeah. So the SEC opponents have been leaked for the 9-game conference schedule coming up. Now, Chris Lowe put this out there yesterday, Joe, and apparently, I guess I was previously unaware of this, but you're going to have your permanent opponents, and then they'll reevaluate it in 4 years. So in 4 years, they'll take a look and see what's working, not working with the permanent opponents, and maybe they'll make some adjustments at that point. On the Vanderbilt front, there are three permanent opponents. Tennessee, which, no duh, we knew that was going to be the case. Auburn and Mississippi State are their three permanent opponents in the SEC for the next 4 years. On the Tennessee front, Alabama, Vanderbilt, and Kentucky. We wondered who that third would be. Would it be Florida? Would it be Kentucky? Would it be somebody else random? It's Kentucky. Alabama, Vanderbilt, Kentucky, the three permanent opponents for Tennessee. So what do you make of that draw and those three opponents for Vanderbilt and Tennessee?
Yeah, I really don't like I understand that there's more history with Kentucky for Tennessee, but I think the Florida rivalry should have been maintained. I'm disappointed by that. I know the thing that most people are talking about is that Alabama-LSU is no longer an annual thing, and that's too bad, but that's the thing with Alabama, right? It's like, so it was going to be Auburn, obviously, Tennessee, I think, obviously, and I'm certainly glad that that's the case, and then instead they get Mississippi State.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, Alabama fans would have been mad if it was Auburn, Tennessee, and LSU. That would have seemed unfair. Boy, that's a good rivalry. For Tennessee, I just wish Florida was maintained. I just think that, look, man, the 90s was a long time ago. The early 90s was a long time ago. That history means more to me, just generally as a college football fan, than the Tennessee-Kentucky series history. So I wish it was Florida. I'd like to know how you
think. No, I'm totally with you. I mean, Florida is a game that means, as a Tennessee fan, a lot more to me than the Kentucky game does. Now, I will say this. There's a lot of complaining I saw yesterday from, like, other SEC fan bases of, like, oh, Tennessee's got it soft. Like, it's like Alabama, Kentucky, and Vanderbilt. Like, first off, Vanderbilt looks pretty good.
We have been talking about how
we'll
good
see,
Vanderbilt
we'll see
is.
What Vanderbilt looks like move forward. Secondly, I didn't hear many people talking much sympathy about when Tennessee, for my entire life, has played Alabama, Georgia, and Florida every year. So. Yeah. I have limited sympathy for those who think Tennessee's draw is soft. It's like, yeah, well, they're probably owed some softness after Alabama, Georgia on a yearly basis.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it, and I do feel bad for Auburn. Alabama and Georgia, and then you've got Vanderbilt as their third.
Yeah, it's like you look at these, it's like, okay, Auburn, you get Vanderbilt. Right. Okay, Alabama, you get Mississippi State.
Right. There's a clear effort here to try to balance it as much as they could. It's never going to be perfect with the balance part of it.
Right. Yeah, like LSU, I mean, I think Arkansas, that's a long-standing rivalry. LSU, yep. Ole Miss, I'm glad that's maintained. And then, I mean, LSU, Texas A&M, you know, I mean, that's worthwhile. Some of these schools have three or more where you're like, you need to maintain. Some of them have one.
Right.
And that's the thing that's interesting. I do like what they're doing in terms of the four-year thing. And I like that the way it's going to work is that they're all going to play each other home and road in that. That's good. I mean, because it's already so ridiculous with these, you know, with the size of these leagues. Something that I find a little bit confusing, like, for example, you know, Texas, their stuff all makes sense. Texas, Texas A&M, Texas, Arkansas, Texas, Oklahoma, right? But Oklahoma, I guess I would think that Oklahoma and, like, A&M would be a natural thing, but it's not. They are not together. Oklahoma's with Missouri as their number one rival, which I'm like, okay, I mean, I guess we're going back to the old Big 8 / Big 12. Then Ole Miss and Texas. That one was a little weird to me.
Well, if A&M ended up with LSU, Oklahoma, and Texas, they would probably riot.
Yes.
That's three pretty tough ones.
It is three pretty tough ones. As is, as is, they got LSU and Texas, and then Missouri, which again, it's like, well, you get Missouri. Well,
I mean,
that's
Missouri,
not necessarily undefeated. Yeah, it's not necessarily a break. I mean, that's the thing about the league too. And so right now, Missouri's up, Vanderbilt's up, Kentucky. I mean, it looks good for Tennessee now. It wasn't that long ago that that's like it's actually a well. It's like they're a solid program that could beat you. They just never beat Tennessee, which, again, is another reason why it's like I don't want that series anymore because, like, I already know who's going to win the game. I'm sorry, Kentucky fans. Like, you'd never beat Tennessee. It's weird.
I'm fine with it.
Yeah, cool. I'm sure you are.
Cool with it. Yeah, I mean, I also love the Alabama one. It's like, well, we knew the Iron Bowl was going to be protected. We knew Tennessee-Alabama was going to be protected. And all the Alabama fans are like, well, we hate LSU too. Throw them in there. And it's like, well, we'll throw you in Mississippi State. You just have Mississippi State.
Yeah, yeah. that's definitely one of those, okay, let's help them out. Meanwhile, Mississippi State and Vanderbilt get each other. So,
they do.
I mean, that's how, and that's how they're viewed. But, hey, by the way, Mississippi State's undefeated this year too. I'm just
saying. Big game coming up
on
Saturday.
They beat Arizona State.
Big game between Tennessee and Mississippi State coming up on Saturday. 615-737-1025. Is our phone number, 615-737-1025. Some, I think, maybe, unexpected news in the world of college sports yesterday. We'll get into that. Coming up next, the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad later this hour at 745. All that ahead, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexroad, 1025 The Game. We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up here in just a few minutes at 745. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Joe, some, I guess, unexpected news yesterday in the world of college sports. Bruce Pearl, former Vols coach, most recently with the Auburn Tigers, did a great job with the Auburn Tigers, announced his retirement, and his son, Stephen Pearl, is taking over the program and will be the head coach of Auburn on a 5-year deal that Stephen Pearl has taken here. So, I mean, we're not that far away from the beginning of college basketball season coming up here in a couple of months. And here we are, Bruce Pearl announcing his retirement and Stephen Pearl taking over. So I was pretty stunned when I saw that. Now, admittedly, I have not been keeping up with Bruce Pearl this offseason. So maybe this has been something that's been coming. But I was surprised by it. What did you think of the timing of it and the announcement of Bruce Pearl's retirement?
Yeah, well, I thought this was coming in like May. I did a big story on the Pearls last year, and I basically became like the Auburn beat writer for The Athletic. So, and they told me, I mean, I can say it now, off the record because it's there now, they've done it, is that basically the plan was, that Bruce wants to hand it off to Stephen. The question was, first of all, is the administration on board, right? Because that is, now, there's a lot of ADs out there, rightfully so, who would be like, yeah, Bruce, amazing coach. Not sure that means that we want your son to be the new coach.
Yeah.
But I figured once we got to this point, obviously I figured, okay, so Bruce is going to do one more year. But I figured it'd be like one more year most. I knew it was coming soon. So it turns out it's okay. It's right before the season. And when I first saw it, yes, I'm like, oh, man. He just put them in a tight spot here. What are they going to do? But it's really interesting because there was no initial mention of Stephen Pearl. And then like a couple hours later, there's a release. Stephen Pearl is the new coach. And it seems crazy to think that like in a day he basically put them in a bind and they said, well, we just have to do it.
Right.
Like it seems like this must have been something the administration knew. But it was weird. And even weird, there was some weird stuff with this yesterday where I'm like, did he just actually just pull this off on them? And then he got Steve, he just rammed him into the coach. Either way, this has obviously been their plan, and it's going to be fascinating with Stephen Pearl because he has sort of taken over in a lot of ways as the big tactician on the staff. He's been, he's recruited a lot of their best players. Like, he's done all the work to get to this point. I just think it's hard. It's going to be hard to follow Bruce Pearl. No one has a personality like Bruce Pearl. Steven doesn't, he's not that guy who just commands a room. And so it's going to be really interesting. As far as Bruce Pearl, and I wrote a column about him today, and a lot of people are mad at me because it's like I called Jay Billis, and, he's like, basically he was a cheater, but who cares? Which is, well, Billis's point is, you know, Jerry Tarkanian and Rick Pitino are in the Naismith Hall of Fame. Yep. Why would Bruce Pearl not be? And I totally agree. He should be. I think he will be. But he's a very people who hate him, who hate Auburn or Tennessee or whatever. Like, I get it. Like, there's coloring outside the lines, and then there's, like, taking all the coloring books out of the library in your bag and stealing them and walking. I mean, this is not just like a – I mean, he did it, man. He put the pedal to the metal there when he was at Tennessee. And I don't know, the barbecue thing, like, who gives a crap about a barbecue? He lied to investigators just like Harbaugh, right? If you're going to lie to investigators, like, that's the barbecue itself is not really the issue.
A pretty
right?
barbecue from what I hear, though.
What's that?
A pretty good barbecue from what I hear, though.
I mean, I hope it was a good barbecue. Yeah. I hope the Kraft family very much enjoyed it. But, look, great coach. I mean, bottom line is he won everywhere. His style of play, the aggression, you know, they used to do more, like, with Tennessee, the up-tempo, the pressure and things like that. And just a great basketball coach. And you think about it, you know, in the SEC, he's, like, the fifth winningest coach of all time. There's only four coaches that have more Final Four than the two he got at Auburn. But to do what he did at two programs – all those other winningest coaches, they're almost all like the Kentucky coaches. Yep. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like to do what he did at Tennessee, which is, you know, let's see, how old are you when he got there? So you're probably about 12, 13 years old. Like, no one gave a crap about Tennessee basketball.
That is correct.
And he turned it into a power and like – and I think that the job was so much better when Rick Barnes took it to now become the winningest coach. I think you give Bruce Pearl credit. At Auburn, no one has ever cared about Auburn. When Charles Barkley was there, no one cared about Auburn basketball.
Yeah.
Tell me, Auburn fans, that you don't care about basketball now. It's a great atmosphere, and, I mean, he did all that.
Yeah, I mean, when you put it that way, it is kind of interesting to think about. Obviously, I mean, the run that he had at Tennessee to set that up. I mean, it was their number one team in the country. I mean, still to this day, I think the greatest college basketball game that I have watched, probably due to my, you know, personal, you know, fandom involved with it, but like that Tennessee Memphis game was unbelievable.
It was awesome.
Like, it was crazy. So like that was awesome, and he was right at the center of that. And I'm with you. Like, if Pearl doesn't take the job at Tennessee and do what he did there, do they eventually end up with Rick Barnes? Probably not, right? Like, it's probably, like, I think that Barnes saw something and saw that you could be successful there. I think that's probably a big reason why he took the job. I never thought about it that way, but when you lay it out, it kind of makes sense that way.
Yeah. No, I mean, I think that he totally changed the profile of the job. And so when Rick was, you know, the Texas thing had just kind of gotten old and stale, and both sides kind of needed a change. And this is a viable option, whereas before – now, some people will say, look, Tennessee fans, they will – well, let me see it with baseball. And I think there's some truth to this, too. Like, if you succeed at Tennessee in something, like, they will show up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But still, you still had to have proof of concept. And that program, you know, here and there, you had some good teams. You had some good teams here and there in the late 90s, early 2000s. And obviously, I mean, you go back to the 70s. With Ernie Birdie, you can go back. Yeah, like Dale Ellis was great. Allen Houston, but those teams weren't even good when they had Allen Houston. His dad was coaching. So I just think what he did to sustain that absolutely changed the profile. And Auburn, you know, good for Stephen Pearl. We'll see. I think there are some challenges because I think with a fan base, you know, if things go poorly, I think it just makes it more intense. We talked earlier in the 6 o'clock hour about coaches being embattled.
Yeah.
I do think if you're Bruce Pearl's son and you take over the program, if it goes poorly, I think the fan, daddy's not here to save you. I mean, that's just how it goes in sports.
Yeah.
So that is going to be a challenge. But if it wasn't him, like I think that job could have attracted some very good candidates that you wouldn't have had a few years ago. Remember, when Bruce Pearl took the job, he was still under the show cause, three-year show cause from the NCAA. He couldn't even talk to recruits. But Auburn's like, that's okay. When you're able to in a few months, we'll be happy to have you as a coach. But he was kind of – it was a great job for him to get at that time, given his situation. Now Auburn is an attractive job.
So is this going to be what we do in college sports now? So he's, you know, Steve – Belichick apparently going to get the North Carolina job when Bill's all said and done?
Is he?
I don't know. That's the plan, I think.
I don't know if Steve Belichick's going to get the North Carolina Central job.
I don't know that he is either.
Coaching safeties.
I just remember talking to Charles Robinson about like that clearly being like Bill's plan.
Oh, yeah.
So we'll see what ends up happening there. But, yeah, they're not off to a good start.
Who is your daddy and what does he do?
Is this the new thing? Like Stephen Pearl gets the Auburn job. Bill Belichick wants Steve Belichick to eventually get the North Carolina job. Just a bunch of fathers coming in and be like, here you go, son. Here's the job for you.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, how many other examples do we have of that? Have we? DePaul. Now that I'm going back, I'm dating myself, but Ray Meyer, great, long time, and he gave it to Joey Meyer. And again, people were, you know, he wasn't as good as his dad's. Like, oh, Joey, lost again. I can't think of too many. If there are other examples out there, let me know. But, remember with, with the Preds. You know, it's like Brian Poyle might be the greatest personnel man in the history of hockey. I don't know. But just because he's David Poyle's son, fans are going to be like, no, right? So you're asking for
increased scrutiny.
Yeah. Thank you. Exactly. Probably why you don't see it too much, but – yeah, that Belichick plan.
They look great.
I mean, they just got absolutely crushed by Central, as Bill calls them.
I love how mad UCF was about that, too.
Oh, yeah.
Like, where are you? The University of Central Florida.
Yeah,
we're not Central.
Scott Frost is back to talking trash now. Now that he's back at UCF, congratulations.
We'll have the Rex Rant with Joe Rexroad coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rexroad, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment, let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rexroad.
Glorious. Victorious.
They think you're some buffoon.
Somebody run over the fraternity. Throw a freaking brick through their window.
Most of their time is spent on grass.
Rexroad, you said we were going to lose, you jerk. Yeah.
Go Tigers.
PK is uninformed on something else.
It's so fun to hear you try to be hip.
I might lose my mind today.
It is time for the Rex Rant. Brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Joe Rexroad, the floor is yours.
Hold on.
That's a trend or two.
What? I don't know what it is. Hold on, don't tell me.
The more we can have of you singing, the better off we all are.
You, my friend.
What the heck is this?
It's a TV
theme. Oh my God, I love that song. I know I love the show. Gosh darn it. It's not, I was like, oh, is this the Silver Spoons theme? Wait, is that Family
Ties?
It's
From Your Girl. No.
Oh, that's Who's the Boss?
Who's the Boss?
Oh my God, duh. I'm so dumb. That's a great pull there. Thank you. Predemption came right with Who's the Boss on the YouTube chat. Golly. I mean, we're sitting here watching Alyssa Milano on Charmed every day in this. Basically, we talk sports and watch Charmed in this studio. That's what we do. And I totally botched that. Yeah, I know. Predemption, you're right. I grew up in the 80s. I don't know. It's one of those things, like, I haven't seen the Extra show in so long, you know? Great job. So I was going to rant today. You know, we've talked a lot about Auburn. I don't want to make Auburn fans feel any worse, but just to let you know, like, the SEC official, the SEC officiating crew, maybe I'll do a three-pronged rant.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Okay, fine. So the SEC officiating crew, this is a perma-rant. I'll bring it back. They completely botched it. They actually went over the rule with Venables, apparently. So Venables told him, you know, because that's what you're supposed to do. When you do these plays as a coach, you tell, like, by the way, this is what we're, you know, just so you know, because you don't want something to, all of a sudden, a flag or something or whatever to misunderstand. Well, this TD that shouldn't have counted, where they were sneaking the guy on the sideline. I mean, the rule, but clearly does not allow it, yet they signed off on it. So the SEC needs to be transparent and suspend them this week and tell us that they're suspended. It's called accountability. For some reason, some leagues worse than others, the SEC, as bad as it gets, can never just hold anybody publicly accountable.
Yeah.
So
they did release a statement that says appropriate accountability will be applied without additional comment.
Right. Tell us. I mean, it's ridiculous. Let the consequences be known. Like, why that has to be kept a secret? Someone explain it to me. It makes no sense. It's a joke. Okay, that's one. Two, I mean, Willie's just spamming me, man. And like, Willie is just all over me on UC Soros. Like, why? I'm just sitting
Apparently, we're going to have a debate in a couple weeks.
So we're going to have a debate on this show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, and like,
when did we bring up Soros?
Willie attacks me. He attacks me all the time. Willie is just on the attack, and I just get a random text every once in a while about like this goalie deal or that goalie deal, and it's like, again, like I'm just concerned that the Preds deal. I don't care about anybody else in the league or who they did with this goalie or that goalie, or they didn't earn it. That's great that he's earned it. But again, I don't care about earning your contract. I care about what are you going to do while you're under that contract. It was a huge decision for the Preds. We both didn't think it was the right way to go. I hope we're both wrong as rain.
Because I'm tired of watching bad sports around here. I hope UC Soros has a 970 save percentage this year.
Yeah. So, but right now, the only question is he going to be great moving forward? Because just because his deal is going to, you know, the cap's going up and there's other deals, or his deal isn't gigantic, it's still a significant chunk. Thank you. It's still a significant chunk. He has to perform.
Yeah.
And if he doesn't perform, and if his age, his style, his size, all that stuff turns out to be what I was concerned with, well, then nothing else matters. Stop attacking me, Willie.
And then we'll see you in a couple weeks, Willie.
Yeah, we'll see you in a couple weeks. And then I guess I'll come back to this too. I mean, I don't know. Is Burrow Ben serious, or is this actually Big Joe? Is Burrow Ben actually Big Joe in disguise? Every time something really pisses me off, I'm like,
well, Burrow Ben is Indy Ben.
Oh, he is?
Yeah.
Oh. Okay. Well, first of all, that's disappointing. Why are you changing your name in the YouTube chat? Just call yourself Indy Ben. That's how we know you. So there's another rant, making a fourth rant. But this is what he said. So is he trolling or I don't know. He said, this is what soft Nashville media sounds like, covering a team that is the absolute worst in the league, making light of things and getting a good laugh. So now I know you're a Colts fan saying that. It changes it, you know, because I was going to be like, what are we supposed to do anymore but laugh? If we can't laugh at these things, like how do we get through a day?
Yeah, like the
do we do?
Look, plenty of criticism has been lobbed the Titans' way on this show. I can't do 17 weeks like we did last year of just looking at them and dissecting every angle of how bad they are. They suck. And until further notice, they suck. We all know it. We don't need reminding of it on a daily basis around here. So, yeah, we're going to laugh at some stuff they do every now and then. Sorry.
I mean, maybe a lot. Like, I've been relegated to coming up with names. I mean, that's really what I do with my spare time. Cheese Whiz, Nice Whiz, Whiz Kid, you know.
Tenant Cheeks, tight buns.
I mean, it's like, eyes titans. Open. Let's go pee.
That's right.
I think I'm going to come up with a song, okay? How about that?
Well, it's been a minute since you've done that. So.
I know. Well, it stinks because I actually had this great song about Jared's film room that I was working on, but then I never did it, and now he's gone. But am I still allowed to sing my Jared's film room song?
I don't know.
It's in the voice of Michael McDonald to the song "What a Fool Believes." I have a whole plan, but I've never been able to unveil it. #JaredsFilmRoom. I could do a whole song like that.
Yeah, the entire song written at one point, didn't you? Then you got your laptop stolen in Knoxville, Tennessee.
God, is that right?
Yeah.
So that's 3 years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, this is like a gene, you know, like John Lennon working on like his genius album. And oh, man.
It's like a
Blink I didn't realize it had been that long in the making.
It's like a Blink 182 songwriting experience. It takes a lot of time, a lot of effort.
Right. Yeah, sure.
So that was three rants from Rexro? Was it four?
Three and a half. Yeah, I'm just.
Gorski'd be all over him today.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Yeah. You weren't monitoring your tone very much.
Yeah. I'm just.
The old three for one from Rexro. I like
right.
it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of, I mean, you really, you get more bang for your buck there, right?
I agree. 615-737-1025. Our phone number. I feel bad. Every time we mention Indy Ben on the show, he just gets attacked on the text line. Just attacked.
Austin, Indy Ben needs to get off his high horse. The Colts are going to get cracked here soon, and they will come back down to earth. But my God. Do you have that, by the way? I mean, let's just play. Let's just make this an absolute smorgasbord of poop.
I need to come up with a time. How many times per show does Joe just put Ian right on the spot?
Yeah, I know.
Oh, you have that?
You got that?
Come you got on. That ready to go?
Let's go.
This is our Colts. This is our team. We bleed blue. This is our Colts. Whether win or lose, we love them. For the shoe, beat the Titans. Hey, Cam Ward. Woo! This is our team. Go Colts.
You know, I got to say,
he was right.
I was a little disappointed in that one.
Yeah, there was
the Titans are so bad that we can't even like properly make fun of them anymore.
Yeah, I like the who part though.
I
like the puns.
Yeah,
but also, did you notice? So I just noticed that. So he said we love them, but usually he says we love you in rhymes.
No, he always says we love them. I'm an expert on this guy. Trust me.
Okay, I'll take your word for it.
The first part seems the script.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought that we love you. He says we love them.
No. Yeah, every time. He's consistent.
All right. Okay. Yeah.
This has been the Rex Rant.
Hold on. This is pretty good. Matt has a submission.
All right.
Kind Wizenhunt. That's good. That's better than mine.
Kind Wizenhunt. That's good.
Yep, we must laugh, okay? We must laugh. This is what we are left with.
The Rex Rant. Brought to you by Functional Medicine of
You're
Tennessee.
You're welcome.
Rise up to better health. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. We will get back into the Titans coming up next, including what is turning into a nice weekly tradition here on the show, reading from a certain former member of the Titans. I get excited about it. We'll get into that coming up next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.